Good afternoon. It's Thursday, the 20th of April, 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish, with me in studio, Mike Robinson. Pretty chilly here in Plymouth, although the sun is shining. We'd just like to say thank you very much to all those who attended the UK Column meeting last night in the George Hotel at Plimpton. Very interesting, Mike, because you weren't there, of course, but people discussing the situation, the election. But many people say, are we really heading to World War III? And obviously serious events happening at the moment, particularly in the Middle East.
Absolutely. So the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons has issued a report on the alleged chemical weapons attack in Syria from a couple of weeks ago. And they're saying that this report underscores that the fact-finding mission continues its work using procedures and methodologies consistent with the mission and reaffirmed at the foreign ministers' meeting. That has been endorsed by the relevant decisions of the Executive Council and the applicable resolutions of the UN Security Council. So that all sounds really good. What was their conclusion? That incontrovertible laboratory results concluding exposure to sarin or a sarin-like substance. But, Brian, they didn't go to Syria. So how can they produce a bona fide report when they didn't go to the scene? They didn't go and speak to witnesses directly at the scene. They didn't take any evidence from the scene. What they've done is they've taken biomedical samples from three victims during their autopsy and also some biomedical samples from people that were under treatment in Turkey. So how can they possibly have produced this report?
Well, it's I'm lost for words, Mike. I'm lost for words. It's fantasy land, isn't it? Because obviously, if you have any form of proper police investigation, one of the things you're going to do is visit the scene of the crime. Let's imagine that the police were investigating murders by staying in their offices in Brighton and a few bits were brought to them, but they're investigating a crime scene in London. I mean, this is complete nonsense.
Absolutely. Well, Boris Johnson today said, today the crucial development is that it has been clear that this was either sarin or sarin-like substance that was used in this gas attack. This is very important. It was either sarin or a sarin-like substance, because this is what the Director General of the OPCW said. He said the results of these analyses from four OPCW designated laboratories indicate exposure to sarin or a sarin-like substance. But this phrase, sarin or a sarin-like substance, well, we originally heard that last week when Matthew Rycroft said chemical weapons scientists at Porton Down in the United Kingdom have analysed samples taken from the location of the alleged attack, and these have tested positive for the nerve agent sarin or a sarin-like substance.
Yeah.
So this is Rycroft, it's Boris Johnson using this language, and it's the OPCW.
And they have to use this language, Mike, and the reason they have to use the language is it is complete and utter nonsense to suggest it was sarin. Because we've got all the video footage of people with no respirators, no protective clothing, just bare skin, handling supposed bodies that have been killed by the use of sarin. Those handlers would themselves be dead. We're dealing with unbelievably toxic substances here. So it could not possibly be sarin. So then you call it a sarin-like substance. And what we're getting into here is it could be another form of organophosphate. But of course, when we go down that, you can be handling these sorts of chemicals to some extent in your garden. So this is the way you get the hype of the sarin. It cannot be sarin or any weaponized chemical
nerve agent
yeah. of this type. Thank you. It cannot be that. So what you then have to do is drift in another phrase to just cover the fact that what you're saying is a complete and utter lie.
Okay.
That's why they're doing it.
So that's absolutely correct. But my point here really is, where did that phrase, because we're talking about specific, he didn't make a comment which was similar to Matthew Rycroft's comment or similar to Boris Johnson's comment. It was identical to their comments.
Yep.
And I find that very interesting. And so does Sergei Lavrov, because he's making the point that British citizens chairing the OPCW don't tell anyone anything, while British scientists have already analysed samples taken at the site of the incident. So he's basically saying that this is British rhetoric being echoed through the OPCW. And well, I think he's absolutely hitting the nail on the head.
Makes sense, Mike. And also, of course, this fits our own experience in the phone call we made a couple of years ago to Brooks Newmark, asking him about the evidence that he was saying there is evidence that Assad has used chemical weapons. We asked the then MP Brooks Newmark where his evidence was, and he pointed us at the UN, he pointed us at Porton Down reports. But of course, none of those reports said that sarin had been used. They were all if, maybe, and of course, who used it, that was never proved. So this is the same pattern of lies that we saw with Conservative MP Brooks Newmark, backed by local Southwest Devon Conservative MP Gary Streeter. Same pattern of lies here, Mike.
So is this a Conservative agenda?
I think it's a strong Conservative agenda. And of course, we've only got to remember back to Libya when, of course, David Cameron with William Hague was crowing that they'd been able to put several hundred million pounds of currency directly into the terrorists that were helping to destabilise Libya. This is a pattern. And you mentioned earlier today, isn't it interesting that when we look out of the window that what our own government is claiming, it is complete nonsense. We hear what the Russians are saying, They're obviously seeing the same view out the window. So at the moment, I think the British government is desperate. It's been caught with its trousers down, having got involved in the creation of this whole terrorist scam in Syria. And how can they cover it up just by telling more lies?
Well, keep in mind that this is a Conservative agenda as we move through this. Lavrov then goes on to absolutely demand that the OPCW goes to the site of the alleged attack and does an independent, a proper investigation. And they're saying that that the investigation should include specialists from all countries that can realistically assess what happened there. These are include permanent members of the UN Security Council and so on. But they are demanding that the OPCW does that. And today, in fact, the OPCW will be voting on this move to set up a new team to look into that attack. So we wait to see what they come up with. But Boris Johnson then, because this is the other key point, there are a number of reports now that the United States is going to attack, have some kind of boots on the ground attack in Syria. Boris Johnson today saying, it is my belief, though I stress no such decision has yet been taken. And since I, sitting here, have to assume that this man is a congenital liar based on what he said in the past, I've got to take that with a very big pinch of salt. He says, though I stress no such decision has yet been taken, he said that there such a request to take part in some kind of military action in Syria to be made in the future, then I think it would be very difficult for the United Kingdom to say no. So in other words, what he's saying is if the US decides for boots on the ground in Syria, it would be difficult for the United Kingdom to say no. Now, yesterday, Brian, yesterday afternoon, Alex Thompson produced an episode of Inside Vox, which we're going to show immediately after this program for the first showing. If you're watching on ukcolumn.org/live, you're going to see that. Alex Thompson was speaking to Peter Ford, the former UK ambassador to Syria. And Peter Ford made the point very strongly during that interview that, of course, the only thing that prevented the last attempts to bomb Syria by the United Kingdom was Parliament. It was people pushing their MPs to vote against such a thing, but it was Parliament that stopped it. Now, what happens if the US, if there has been a decision taken for boots on the ground in Syria, and that decision is taken, has been taken to time that with the dissolution of Parliament as a result of the forthcoming general election, then we have the situation where Parliament is not in a position. Would Parliament be recalled? It's very hard to know. I'm not sure what the constitutional position is when there's a general election on, different when it's a summer holiday. So, of course, Theresa May would then be in a position to use the royal prerogative to take Britain to war without any parliamentary scrutiny. that's a pretty dangerous situation. So I think the timing of this is very interesting.
It's very interesting. And I'll come back to our UK column meeting last night when one of the people present raised this very issue. They said, isn't it remarkable that, as you can see, the tension being ramped up and ramped up by the Americans, we're now entering at a point where we wouldn't have a sitting parliament. So you're thinking along those lines, Mike. Somebody else is thinking along those lines. Is this the sort of devious policy making these people would get up to? And I think the answer to that is yes. But on a positive note, we can say it also demonstrates the fear that the British government has of the wider public, that when the wider public do the right thing, the government has to cave in. So maybe that's a positive step. But the other thing I'll add is a couple of weeks ago, there were reports that appeared on a variety of YouTube channels showing American reconnaissance teams operating in the northeast of Syria. And the statement was that these specialist units, very lightly equipped, they were definitely reconnaissance units, were acting on the direct orders of President Trump. So what were they there for? They're there to obviously spy out the lie of the ground, to work with potential allies. But yes, the number suggested that the Americans were considering putting in a large number of troops on the ground.
So then we've got, Brian, do we not, two possibilities here. Either Boris Johnson is lying that no decision has been made because there's already been reconnaissance going on. What are they reconnoitering for? Are they planning something that might happen 5 years down the road? I don't think so. Yeah. The other possibility is, as Putin has and also Lavrov have suggested, that there may be another chemical weapons incident in the coming days and weeks, which may justify such action.
This wouldn't surprise me, because I think they are desperate to get something that triggers the public to being on their side. The general public in UK at the moment, I don't think, is convinced by the rhetoric coming out from Theresa May and Boris Johnson. So they try another even more horrific event to try and get that stage acting. Blame it on Assad, and then that will trigger presumably some form of massive ground action by the Americans. And as Assad has said himself, and it's been echoed by President Putin, of course, this is an invasion of a sovereign nation state. So it's unlawful for UN law, if we want to take any account of that. But it seems that this is being built as we speak.
Indeed. And certainly quite a number of media outlets covering this story. This is the Times of Israel saying that Syria has been said to have moved its jets to a base route used by Russia because they're fearing US strikes. So obviously they're hoping to come under the cover of at least they're assuming that the US will not attack a Russian airbase in Syria. And also the Russians themselves, the Russian embassy UK this morning tweeting this out, as a follow-up to chemical incident, US considering 10 to 150,000 ground force. I'm assuming that's 10 to 15,000 is what it's meant to say. It's quite a wide range otherwise.
I have seen figures as high as 150,000.
Okay.
I'll just add here, we're talking off the cuff, but if you want to do something in Syria, it's no good putting 15,000 troops in.
Yep. So. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and they go on to say UK to be part of it, even with Commons dissolved. Now, what's interesting is this is a poll on Twitter, and currently 21% of people believe that the UK would be part of it, even with the Commons dissolved. 61% say no. I think that if that is it is a genuine figure as far as the poll is concerned. It's only 377 votes, but nonetheless, if 61% of people responding to that poll think that the UK would not be part of it with the Commons dissolved, then they've learned no lessons from past events, particularly Iraq.
That's correct. That would be correct, Mike. We remains to be seen. I believe that a lot of people now are on the right path, but they're still very trusting. There are still a lot of people. We spoke to one gentleman this morning. Who would you vote for? Well, there's no alternative. You've got to vote for Theresa May. There's no real consideration of whether Theresa May tells the truth, whether she's involved in devious activity behind the political scenes. People are very trusting of British politicians, and the politicians don't deserve it.
Absolutely. So, as I say, straight after this programme, Alex Thompson speaking to Peter Ford, if you're watching on ukcolumn.org/live, and we'll have that on the UK Column website later this afternoon.
Right. OK, well, let's bring in the Royal United Services Institute. Why are we interested in this organisation? Because this has become one of the driving forces of military and foreign policy for UK. We need to ask some questions. Here's a screenshot from their website. And of course, it features Boris Johnson on the front page. He's talking about Syria. We did a little bit of digging into the site to see who'd written this. And here's the lady, Sarah Lane. Now, she's interesting because she's come from a sort of commercial background where she was doing risk analysis in countries for some of the bigger organisations like KPMG, I believe it was. And now, all of a sudden, she switched across to some pretty hardline military foreign policy issues. She seems very young to me, but there we are. So what do we know about this organisation? Well, I've had to take a video to get the scale of this across. But if you can read the screen there, I know it's very small. This is funders of RUSI, and the first and overwhelmingly biggest funder just happens to be the European Commission. So we've got a pro-EU organisation which is simply interfacing with British politicians and military people like Boris Johnson to form policy. And of course, the European policy is regime change in Syria.
Absolutely. I find that a bit ironic. This is the Royal United Services Institute. Why is it not the Royal Family supporting this financially? Why is it the European Commission?
Well, the Royal Family wouldn't want to spend any of their own money. That's an inverted commas, because they'd rather spend it on pop stars and parties and drink and drugs or whatever else gets it spent on.
Biggest benefits cheats in the country.
Indeed. Yes. So let's play this little video. It might be a little bit slow to start, but hopefully we'll get going. Is it going to go? Yes, it is. Let's follow our way through. We've started off there with the European Commission at $1 million. And as we scroll down, we've got the next big set of donors at 200,000 to 500,000. We've got people like BAE Systems, HSBC. Then we get to Qatar Ministry of Foreign Affairs, always a good place to have your funding from. AIG Europe Limited, Airbus Group, British Embassy, Israel, Northrop Grumman, so we're into the defence industry, Babcock, Boeing, all of the big companies involved in defence. Then we've got BT, we've got the Cabinet Office, we've got the Centre for Global Energy, we've got General Dynamics, Inmarsat Global Government, we've got KPMG, we've got Saatchi, we've got Price Waterhouse, Kinetic. What's your opinion on this? This is a pretty massive governmental and private funding.
Yes. How much money? I wonder what the total budget is then.
Well, it goes on and on, Mike. I don't know. But what I think we'd better tell the audience, in case they haven't worked it out, is that despite all that money coming in from the European Union and all those private corporations and Qatar and other governments, the Israelis, this is independent. This organisation is independent.
Do you get that independence from taking money from all and sundry?
I think they take money from all and sundry because it blurs what they really are. Imagine if they were just taking the million from the European Union, it would be pretty obvious what this is as a European organisation. So you bring in the other people to mix it up and blur it. And then you say you're working with global partners. So this is a big propaganda exercise. And I had to do a bit more because we had a look at who was involved. And let's just play this one through. Again, it's a little bit slow to start. I'm sorry about that. But we've got the patron, Her Majesty the Queen. We've got the Duke of Kent as the president. We've got a Mr. Petraeus as the senior vice president. We'll come on to him. We've got Lord Hague. We've got John Scarlett. We've got Vice Admiral Rory McLean. Duke of Wellington, Sir Roger Bone, the Right Honourable Hague again. Oh, the Hague of Richmond. I'm not sure if that's a different one. We've got Lord Arbuthnot, Jane Atwood, Lord Campbell, Bob Keane, whoever that is. It goes on and on and on. And you ask what the interests of these people are. And you come to the opinion that this cannot possibly be independent in any way. So let's pick up on this one. Here he is. So this is Mr. Petraeus, former military commander in Afghanistan in 2010. He then moved on to become director of the CIA, but he was found guilty of sharing classified material with his floozy, his mistress, Paula Broadwell. So this seems to be a really good fellow to have as the senior vice president of this independent, trustworthy organisation.
Excellent.
Excellent. And if we just bring in one more, because it's a, you know, it is good fun. We could be here all morning or all afternoon, rather. We've got the vice chairman there as Sir John Scarlett. And of course, this was the man heavily embroiled in the intelligence fiasco in Iraq. So who are these people? Who selected them? And why have we got the British government kowtowing to what is clearly an EU bought and paid for organisation?
Well, Roosi was hosting Bill Gates today. Bill Gates, of course, the philanthropist, as he likes to be these days. He likes to be vaccinating everybody around the world. But he's mainly talking or worrying about bioterrorism. He's concerned that it's a much larger threat than a pandemic. He's saying that scientists say a fast-moving airborne pathogen could kill more than 30 million people in less than a year. So it's all about ramping up the fear. He's saying all these advances in biology have made it far easier for a terrorist to recreate smallpox, which is a highly fatal pathogen, where there's essentially no immunity remaining at this point. How could there be no immunity remaining at this point? I thought smallpox was beaten. I thought vaccination programs had sorted that problem out.
We'll have to talk about this again, Mike, because one of the excellent things that came out in our meeting last night was a pamphlet all about vaccines and indeed diseases which we traditionally vaccinated against, showing that the death rates from these diseases from government statistics was declining rapidly before vaccines went anywhere near them.
Yes. So, and the other message that Bill Gates had for the Roosi meeting was that foreign aid is hugely important, that it's really great that Britain is spending 0.7% of GDP on foreign aid, that withdrawing foreign aid would cost lives, which is a reason enough to continue it, he said. So Britain shouldn't be praised, not ridiculed, for sticking to that commitment. And it would also create a leadership vacuum if we were to withdraw foreign aid, apparently. How does that work?
Well, we know, because first the aid comes in and then the military power comes in with the aid. So we've been reporting that for quite a long time.
Absolutely. So he is directly referring to this soft power velvet glove complex again. Well, of course, Bill Gates, highly interested in vaccinations. Let's see the other side of the argument. Vaxxed is coming back to England. In West London, once again, it's next Thursday, the 27th, between 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. The venue has not been announced just yet. It will be confirmed in the day. But if you want to find out more, if you want to go and see it, then please go to the Bring Vax to the UK Facebook page. All the details are there. Dr. Suzanne Humphreys and Polly Tommy will be are touring the UK and Ireland, and this is part of that tour. So do get along to that if you can.
And can we just add to that, Mike, that for our overseas viewers, what better reflection of the state of Britain than to put out a film which is showing the dangers of widely used vaccinations? The British state is reacting so violently that you can only put out the location
on the day.
Yeah. So this isn't a third world country, as the British government likes to talk about the third world. This isn't Eastern Europe. This is supposedly Theresa May's conservative democracy, where if you try to tell the truth about the dangers of vaccines, the government is going to bully and pressurise the venue to close down your showing of that film. What more evidence do we need that Theresa May is building a dictatorship? Now, if you want to know what can be done about all this, this is the aim of the British Constitution Group conference in Nottingham on the 22nd, so less than 2 days to go. And this is a meeting to bring concerned people together to discuss what they are doing, what they have found to work, what can be done, which should be done. And of course, the aim is to be amongst a group of people teaching ourselves what we should be doing and then spreading the word. So if you want to be active, if you want to do more than simply emailing and tweeting to friends who also are concerned, then come along to the Nottingham venue. A huge space, can take 900 people. We already know there's going to be high numbers there, but if you haven't got a ticket, please get on the British Constitution Group website. And we'll just give some advertising time to the new Holly Gregg Justice website that is up. This, the previous site taken down, it would appear, by the Scottish government putting pressure on Google. And I wonder whether it's just a coincidence that this gets taken down within a couple of weeks of an election being called, Mike. Something in it, we don't know. And remember that Portland Communications is the firm that Google is using to advise it. And Portland Communications, headed up by a man previously very close to Tony Blair. So strong government connections. And go and have a look at this website, because on it, it's got an update of the trial, the Heather Capital trial, where huge amounts of money disappeared from a hedge fund. And unfortunately, that hedge fund was linked to Peter Watson of Levy & McRae solicitors or law firm, the very firm that started to threaten people in Scotland to get them to close down any sites talking about Holly Gregg. And of course, the very man who phoned the UK column to attempt to pressurise us into dropping our reporting on Holly Gregg. I'm pleased to say we never did. And we'll also give this up and coming site some airtime. This is Fresh Start Foundation, and this is an initiative by Andy Peacher, who's been working extremely hard to expose child abuse over many years. A big event on Wednesday, the 3rd of May. So that's coming up at the Station Hotel, Leonard Street in Perth. Get on the website, and if you're able to go to that, there's some really excellent speakers, and Andy and the other people there, of course, will be very glad to see you.
Okay, Brexit then. Theresa May meeting Antonio Tajani today. Of course, Tajani, one of the three presidents of the European infrastructure. He's the president of the European Parliament, because, of course, you need three presidents when you're a supranational state like the European Union. Don't you? So she was holding talks today with the President of the European Parliament over the so-called red lines for Brexit negotiations. Well, they spoke for a whole 45 minutes, Brian. Mr. Tajani came out and said, the message is a positive message. We want to strengthen citizens' rights, European citizens living in the UK and UK citizens living in the European Union. This is the most important message. We want to work together. Mrs. May underlined this position. It's our position. Here we were both in favour of our citizens. It's a good start, a good beginning. Now we need to go for implementation. So there you go.
Excellent.
Isn't it? Well, anyway, election then. And the media, well, I've just chosen this particular article from The Telegraph. I can't believe all this. Brenda finds out she's gone viral after her general election comments. And the media really pushing the idea that as Brenda was expressing, oh no, not another election. So people apparently disenfranchised, they don't want to know. Well, Twitter is absolutely denying this. They have said that engagement following the announcement of the election was extremely high, that they were seeing a massive response of people discussing the election. So do we believe the mainstream media, or do we believe social media? I think I would choose the latter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Already we're starting to see political parties positioning because I think they recognise the situation with the Tories at the moment. In Plymouth here, we've got a number of parties, the Green Party, the Labour and the Lib Dems, in discussions about who's going to stand in which Plymouth constituency to see if they can actually minimise the split of the opposition vote. In fact, I understand that the Green Party has written to the Labour Party and the Lib Dems at a national level to try and get this situation rolled out nationally.
Yep.
Now, the Labour Party has a slight problem, I understand, because within their constitution, they are required to stand in every seat. So whether they are actually able to make a leadership decision on this or not, I'm not certain.
Yeah.
But that remains to be seen. So we keep an eye on this.
If I may just add to that, since that's a local headline, a few days ago I heard that possibly Gary Streeter, Conservative MP, may not stand. I think there was a report in the local paper indicating that he had a bit of discussion with Mrs. Streeter and he might not stand. But I was told last night that all three of the Tory MPs in Plymouth, so that's Oliver Colville and Johnny Mercer and Gary Streeter, were arms around each other. They're all going to stand again. And I think Putin describes some of this as the nodding dogs. So Theresa May has called her troops together. We know the Tory party uses the whips to blackmail MPs via child abuse, if that's the appropriate thing for that person. Who knows what goes on in the background?
And who else is there? Well, there's UKIP. And Brian, it just never ceases to amaze me how fractious UKIP is. And right at the centre of this is Nigel Farage. And I just find this utterly reprehensible, actually. Paul Nuttall has been in the job for a matter of a month or two. He has, you know, Farage saying that he now has 6 weeks to prove himself as a UKIP leader. This is nuts. This is just an utterly divisive statement.
The party has always been the same, Mike, from the outset. It is controlled by Nigel Farage. There was never any intent to move the party forward. He waved the flag, he drew the supporters in, he controlled the membership. And even though he's technically stepped down, Nigel Farage is still controlling UKIP. And his agenda, in my opinion, is to make sure that the 17 million people who voted never do anything useful. Right. So he's divisive deliberately.
So, Paul Nuttall could not have known that this election was going to take place, and to suggest that he has 6 weeks now to prove himself is nuts. Give the guy a chance, for goodness sake. Right, what's next?
Well, this one is very good, because basically we had an email in from a gentleman who had been paying attention to what we've been saying about essentially the UK being hollowed out. He says, "Dear Brian, hope you're well. During the negotiations that Cameron and the Europhiles had, the plan was for the UK to go into associate membership as part of the Five Presidents report, but the Spinelli group." And then he's talking about a speech that Cameron gave. But the nub of it is that somebody else, picking up really on what we've been reporting and saying, "I'm getting the impression that UK is simply going to be hollowed out, turned into complete junk, and then left parked on the side of Europe. Integration goes on, but we're in a sort of parallel system." So I thought this was very encouraging to see that somebody's really picking up on the detail and is kind enough to email in. And this is part the what the gentleman was talking about. So this is part of the video with Cameron spelling out what he wants from the EU. This was on the lead up to the referendum. And it's a piece of video well worth looking at again to see what Cameron was saying in hindsight. And this is the document mentioned, completing. Now, this is 2015, but it's completing Europe's economic and economic and monetary union. And it's incredible, isn't it? Because it's saying it, that they were at the end game here. The whole thing is complete and utter integration. And just read this: formalising the convergence process in the medium term, the convergence process towards more resilient economic structures, as described above, should become more binding. This would be achieved by agreeing on a set of common high-level standards that would be defined in EU legislation. And here's the quote, as sovereignty over policies of common concern would be shared. Shared sovereignty. So we have the British government at the moment piling ahead with EU military unification, and that has got to be a key area which shares sovereignty with the European Union. So we can see here we've got a complete lie over Brexit. And as we've been warning, the country is being hollowed out and still given to the EU while we have these excuses about why we can't simply break away.
Sorry, just before you go on, The other document that people need to go back and look at once again is David Cameron's Best of Both Worlds document. This was the document that he presented prior to the referendum, which was the result of his grand tour of Europe, where he was talking about Britain being part of a reformed European Union. And this is the type of reform that he was talking about, of course. And if you compare the contents of that document and you compare the contents of Theresa May's recent comments about the new relationship with the European Union once we're out, you find that we're in exactly the same. It's exactly the same policy which is being presented.
Yeah. So we'll just reinforce that. This is actually Breitbart from December, 29th of December 2016. But this is where the reality of the fact that Britain had signed up to massive European military integration despite the Brexit vote. This article is worthy of reading, particularly now with hindsight. So this was one of the quotes, the plans use all means at the EU's disposal to encroach on every single area of UK defence planning. That was Major General Julian Thompson. And it goes on here, policy, procurement, funding, intelligence services, command structure and defence research are all appropriated by these EU plans. And there has been no change to this, despite the lies and rhetoric coming out of the Conservative government. Rear Admiral Roger Lane Knott here says that basically the plans represent a startling escalation of central activity and control. So we have the British Conservative government under Theresa May, Boris Johnson, lying that there is a movement away from the European Union, when under the surface our military utterly locked into a massive EU unification process.
Well, some good news, Brian. Here we go. £1.4 billion heading off to British Aerospace, BAE Systems, rather. So the Ministry of Defence has negotiated a new £1.4 billion contract for the Royal Navy's new attack submarine. This is the sixth in a fleet of seven. And there's Michael Fallon there looking very proud in front of BAE Systems staff. This is going to be Agamemnon. Part of the Astute class, the largest, they say, and most advanced and most powerful attack submarines. And these submarines are being built in Barrow-in-Furness in Cumbria, and they're going to be used to defend our aircraft carriers, which is quite good because, of course, now we are putting a 20 Naval Air Squadron. It's now ready to join HMS Queen Elizabeth, the new supercarrier, as it's being described. Which is really great. So we're going to fly some helicopters.
It's going to be a helicopter carrier.
It's going to be a helicopter carrier.
Meanwhile, we're going to get rid of our helicopter carrier. That's going to be sold off to scrap.
Yes.
But now we've got a bigger new ship.
Yeah, so these are Merlin helicopters of 820 Naval Air Squadron. They're going to be the first aircraft, soon followed by Apaches, Wildcats and Chinooks. And eventually, perhaps if they ever fly properly, the F-35.
Yeah.
So the Merlin helicopters are going to start off by running low risk, simple flights, apparently. That's going to start taking place in the summer before the ship arrives in Portsmouth for the first time, only 6 months late.
I just encourage viewers to go and have a little look on YouTube, put something like British aircraft carriers, Second World War, and you can see British aircraft carriers, the decks absolutely stacked with aircraft. And they were out there doing the operation. And now apparently It's like a children's book unfolding that we're thinking about some aircraft carriers and we realise we've got to have some planes, but we haven't got that sorted. We've got to do a little bit of training. This should be routine, nothing special, getting on with the job. But we haven't got those aircraft carriers operational. We haven't got those submarines operational. And we haven't got the MPAs. What is it?
In a recent
cyber Navy, I think, is what we're talking about here.
Yeah, Brian, in a recent speech, Donald Trump was talking about the fact that the United States at the height of the Second World War was producing one of their big bombers a day, one per day was coming off the production line. We're incapable of that kind of productivity these days.
Our production has been absolutely ruined. And of course, we've been talking about the government placing an order for tankers, the Tidespring class. They buy the tankers for $178 million, or whatever the total value of that project was, from a fraudulent South Korean company. They bring the first ship back to UK late and boast that it's going to give 300 British jobs. And Fallon is getting away with it. Theresa May is getting away with it because nobody is tackling the MPs concerned, apart from the UK column. And of course, Gary Streeter, so unsettled, he reverts to a sort of public abuse.
I'm not speaking to you anymore.
I'm not speaking. You're asking me the wrong question. These are very, very serious times. Utter lies from Theresa May's Conservative government.
Okay. Sky News here reporting police may have to shoot terrorists at the wheel under more aggressive tactics. So we're now extremely concerned about people using vehicles as a weapon. And so we're going to give the police the power to just shoot people in the front of cars. So it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, a 17-year-old car thief who has been mistaken as a terrorist, or terrorism is the excuse for doing it. There's no requirement to demonstrate that somebody has actually committed an offence before you just shoot them.
So a shoot-to-kill policy, which the police have been remarkably good at. And we had the incident in Manchester a while back where the, okay, local criminal, but the police simply shot him and there's an investigation and, well, of course, nothing happens because this is the policy.
Well, it's interesting that the inquiry into that event is taking place today. And the person that was sitting in the seat next to him said that there was no warning given, whereas the police maintained that there was. But, of course, they had already stopped the car in that situation. In the meantime, this new system is going to be a car moving on a street. They don't know what the car is. They don't know who's driving it. They're just going to shoot the occupant.
Yeah.
Now, I think back 20 years or 30 years, Brian, to when there were allegations of a shoot-to-kill policy in Northern Ireland and the absolute uproar among the British media about that the British Army might have a shoot-to-kill policy in Northern Ireland against Republican terrorists. Where is the uproar over this?
Well, there isn't one because we now know that the media are fully engaged with government policy. But we'll say once again, welcome to Britain under Theresa May's government in 2017, looking more like a police state by the day. If we allow her to get in with an increased majority, of course, there is nobody, certainly in Westminster, to stop the Tories and whatever policy they want to carry out. Well, let's bring in this one. Piers Corbyn has been speaking out and there's been a lot of reaction in the media. He says the BBC is evil and biased against the Labour leader, his brother, obviously, Jeremy. And it's a rant and he's attacking the Jimmy Savile cover-up. I read this and I think to myself, this sounds like a good man.
Yeah.
The BBC is evil, absolutely sexualising our children, pumping out complete rubbish and propaganda. So I think we're going to give Piers Corbyn the vote. What did he have to say? Well, this was part of it. He said the BBC had been involved in cover-ups of Hillsborough and at Orgreave, where police and miners clashed. He added, look at the paedophilia and the cover-up of Jimmy Savile. And then I had to put this on screen because it just makes me smile. A BBC spokesman, anonymous, of course, because this is a secretive organisation, dismissed the accusations, describing itself as an independent and impartial broadcaster.
Has that statement been fact-checked by reality check?
I thought you might answer that. So I did have a look at Reality Check, and what I've noticed about the BBC's Reality Check is it isn't actually checking anything. What it's doing is carefully rubber stamping government policy. So it's endorsing whatever the latest government announcement is. It does a little bit of questioning, and then it answers its own questions, and then it says, well, basically what the government is telling you is correct. And the other interesting thing is they don't even manage to do that on a daily basis, because presumably with a budget of 3.65 billion, they haven't got somebody to work on it every day. Amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's the end of our news today. Thank you very much for joining us. And I'm going to say, please, if you're not already a subscriber of UK Column, get onto the website and subscribe. BBC's got a budget of 3.65 billion. We are here every lunchtime, 5 days a week. We'd like to expand. We can only do that with your financial help. Thank you very much. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.